Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
We didn't have a transparent and impartial election. The Electoral Commission managed to work for one of the candidates. That's why we are saying that we need to redo the election.
A Congolese presidential candidate demands a rerun of the December 20 elections.
We do have very good chance to elect the first female president, and I think that will be a very great opportunity for Senegal. I do believe that women have specific leadership style.
Mimi Touré, a former prime minister, seeks to become the first female president of Senegal.
I do have some experience in leadership, in that I was president of the Female Lawyers Association Gambia, FLAG, for two terms. That was between 2011 and 2016. And we did manage to fly the flag high, defending Gambian women and children.
And the Gambia Bar Association elects Nene Cham as the new president to lead the law organization. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the presidential candidate for the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party is calling on citizens to pressure the Electoral Commission, known as CNE, to organize fresh polls. This after Martin Fayulu rejected the December 20 vote as fraught with irregularities and logistical challenges that make it difficult to accept the poll outcome. He is backed by several other opposition and civil society groups calling for fresh elections, but supporters of the ruling party rejected the demand, saying the opposition leader will not call for a new vote if he were to win. Political observers say the call is not likely to happen after it appears incumbent President Felix Tshisekedi is in the lead in the results being released by CNE. For more reaction to his call for fresh elections, I reach opposition leader Martin Fayulu.
You know that the elections were not the real one. We didn't have transparent and impartial election. The Electoral Commission managed to work for one of the candidates. That's why we are saying that we need to redo the election because of many irregularities. The staffing of ballot boxes, the no witnesses in the polling station, and the violation of the electoral law. The election has been taken for 6 days, whereas the law says that it should be taken in, organized in 1 day.
What makes you think that if the elections are rerun, it will be credible and transparent and it will not follow the same pattern?
Yeah, you're right. Your question is relevant. That's why we are saying that we have to rerun the election with an independent, really independent electoral commission. We have to change the electoral commission. Those who will come, they are not politicized. Those who will really want to work for the country. And also, we have to get help, support from the UN, the United Nations. Their electoral section should come to Congo like they did in 2006. So, they can help us to have a transparent and a credible and impartial elections.
But Mr. Fayulu, on one hand, DRC is asking the UN to leave. And then on the other hand, DRC is asking the UN to come back and help them organize elections. Where does the sovereignty of the DRC lies if you cannot organize your own elections?
It's not a matter of sovereignty. They are asking MONUSCO to leave, but we are not asking MONUSCO to leave. We are asking the UN to set up a robust mission to fight for peace, not to maintain peace. We don't have peace. MONUSCO has failed. Everybody is completely right. But we are still member of the UN. We are a member of the United Nations, and we are asking help because we are a failed state. We don't have the strong institutions, and we cannot be afraid of that or be ashamed. We have to ask those who can help us, you know, but the UN, we are a member of UN, and we need the UN help. That's why we are asking the UN to come. Those guys are saying MONUSCO has to go, and yes, MONUSCO on this the current mission, but we want a strong, a robust mission so they can fight like the UN did in 1960 in this country.
Well, Mr. Fayulu, supporters of the president are of the opinion that if you knew all these problems with the CNE, yet you went in there to compete, and now that you are defeated, you are calling on the international community to put pressure on the government to organize re-elections, and that is not feasible. So what is your next line of action?
No, we are not defeated, but they know that they stuff the ballot boxes. This is another game. And everybody, the Catholic and the Protestant Church mission, organization mission, has released their statement, which is a strong statement. They are asking the Electoral Commission to tell us about all irregularities that people have observed, so people can rely on the results that will come up. We are not defeated. Tshisekedi cannot defeat me in Kinshasa, for example. No way. Tshisekedi cannot defeat me in all Bangundu. Tshisekedi cannot defeat me in Beni, Butembo, nowhere in Kisangani. Because everybody found that it's not normal. Those results are totally false. Okay? But, you know, there is a way that somebody can make fraud. In some manner. But what they did is God disturbed them, and today, even the youth, the 5 years old, they are saying that this cannot be true.
Martin Fayulu is the presidential candidate for the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party. He spoke with me from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa. In Botswana, the Independent Electoral Commission, or IEC, is coming under criticism by the opposition and other stakeholders who say it has contradicted the election principles of the Southern African Development Community, or SADC. They are signed by Botswana and other members of the regional bloc and are aimed at promoting democracy. But a spokesperson of the IEC says the principles are not binding on member countries. This, as the electoral body pushed back against opposition and civil society groups who want to monitor the compilation of the voter list to be used for next year's general election. For analysis, I reached Dr. Kebapetse Luchwayo. He is the head of department at the University of Botswana's Political and Administrative Studies and a senior political science lecturer.
The electoral law does not allow party agents to observe election registration. That is what the Court of Appeal has actually, that is how it has ruled, that in the electoral law, it is not provided for that political parties can observe.
If nobody is able to monitor the voter compilation process or the voter registration exercise, how then do you ensure transparency in the electoral process?
But after registration has been conducted and has been completed, political parties and the public at large, they are actually given an opportunity to inspect the voters' rolls. And where there are issues, they can point out those issues to the Electoral Commission so that they can be rectified. So the political parties and the public are still going to have an opportunity to inspect the voters' roll once registration has been completed. That is what the law provides for.
The Independent Electoral Commission is aware about concerns opposition political parties raised about the last general election that it was rigged. Why wouldn't it accommodate these people to ensure that it presents itself as a neutral arbiter?
No, I think what needed to have happened is that after the last elections, or even the elections before the 2019 general election, perhaps the UDC should have come up with processes of reforming the electoral law, because political parties, the civil society, and some observers have over the years actually made recommendations as to how the electoral process can be improved, particularly how it can be made more transparent.
Does the UDC have the parliamentary muscle or the numbers to amend the law because of the dominance of the ruling party in parliament? So where do they go from here?
But the UDC, of course, they I don't think they have done anything themselves, perhaps on the floor of parliament, to try and convince members of parliament of the ruling party, show them the importance of supporting this reform. Because it's a reform that, if done, it can actually go a long way in improving electoral transparency. Of course, it's unfortunate, as you say, that if it comes before parliament, it will be defeated, because the ruling party is very strong in parliament.
But the question is, why should members of the ruling party do away with the status quo when it helps them to win elections? Why would they subscribe to an opposition party's suggestion to increase transparency if that would not go in favor of the ruling party in parliament?
Well, naturally, they would not support that, because they cannot support something that undermines their power. So they wouldn't.
Botswana signed the SADC protocol on election principles. So in spite of the fact that they signed to it, it doesn't want to implement it back home, saying it is non-binding. So why sign up to subscribe to the law when you know you will not implement it at home?
Yeah, I think that is an anomaly that has to be addressed. But it goes back to the nature of regional organizations in the African continent. The African Union, SADC, you know, when you are a state and you join a regional organization, you are transferring to that organization. So you should not be given an option as to whether you want to implement the policies and the ideals of the organizations. Once you join, you should be obliged. You should be expected to implement what you signed up for. So perhaps this is a lesson that more has to be done also at the level of SADC to ensure that once countries sign for processes, they actually implement them. They should not be given options. They should be obliged. They should be forced.
Kebapetse Lochwayo is the head of department at the University of Botswana's Political and Administrative Studies and a senior political science lecturer. He spoke with me from the Botswana capital, Habaroni.
On this weekend's Issues in the News, tensions boil in the Middle East, Israelis and Palestinians on their hopes for life after the war. The year ends for Ukraine with massive Russian attacks, a look back and what comes next. And extreme weather due to climate change is uprooting millions of children worldwide. Listen this weekend on VOA's Issues in the News.
In Zambia, a leading member of the governing United Party for National Development, or UPND, says citizens are witnessing a raised leadership bar by the administration led by President Hakainde Hichilema. Gregory Mofu says the decision by the president to accept the resignation of Foreign Minister Stanley Kukubo demonstrates Hichilema's commitment to weeding out corruption and promoting effective governance. His comments follow the resignation of the foreign minister over allegations of corruption. This after Kakubo was seen in a viral video receiving cash from a Chinese business person. Kakubo, who is also a parliamentarian, says he resigned so the government will not be distracted by the allegations and controversy over the viral video. For analysis and more reaction, I reach Gregory Mofu.
We in the UPND, we believe the resignation of Stanley Kakuo, the former foreign affairs minister, is a testament that President Hakainde Hichilema has raised the leadership bar. President Kakuo has not even been found guilty. We believe that incident was a private business, and it didn't break the parliamentary or cabinet minister's code of conduct. But because of the high leadership bar that the president has attached to his new dawn era, President Kakuo has said that, no, let me resign. Let me resolve my issue. I do not want my private issue to derail the government from the current service to better the lives of Zambia. So we in the UPND, we welcome the decision by the minister to resign, and also we welcome the decision by the president to accept his resignation.
Are you saying that people of Zambia are now seeing a new way of governance, particularly when it comes to the fight against corruption, that even a semblance or allegations of corruption in itself forced a minister to resign and the president to accept his resignation? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. And not just in Zambia, in Africa. In Africa, my brother, it is unheard of a cabinet minister resigning over private allegations. We saw that in the past. There were several ministers in the previous government who were going to court, were serving as ministers. Imagine how would the judge feel. This person reaches in a ministerial vehicle with a flag and he goes into court. The judge or the magistrate will feel scared, will be threatened. Even the Anti-Corruption Commission, how is it going to investigate? How are the police going to investigate when somebody is still sitting as a minister and is still being served as the president? So, Honorable Kakuo's resignation, in fact, is a plus for the fight against corruption because it is giving the investigative wing's chance for them to call him now, because now he's a private citizen, he's no longer a cabinet minister, though he's still a member of parliament, but they can easily call him, summon him, what happened here and there and there. And those people who are questioning him will not feel threatened that we're speaking to a cabinet minister. No.
Gregory, what do you say to Sishua, a Zambian academic and critic of the administration who wrote that, you know, you do not thank a thief for resigning? Your response to that?
Honorable Kakuo is one of the finest minister of home affairs that we have had in my 35 years on earth in Zambia. He's one of the best foreign affairs ministers that we have had. The last best foreign affairs minister was Honorable Vernon Mwanga. That was during the MMDs of President Manawasa. This is somebody who, he has never served as a diplomat. He has never done anything to do with foreign affairs. Honorable Kakuo is a former banker. He's specialized in Forex and the likes. But when he came into that ministry, Zambia returned in the Champions League of diplomacy. It returned on the international map, which way it went missing for the past 10 years. Maybe my brother is in France, where everyone is guilty and still proven innocent. But the Zambian law, which falls under the Commonwealth law, says that everyone is innocent until proven guilty. So as far as we are concerned, as far as the Haka and Hichima is concerned, Honorable Kakuo is innocent until proven guilty. That is why Honorable Kakuo has resigned. And even in his resignation letter, he said that, "I have resigned and I'm very shocked with what's happened because me and these partners were in good books." So anyway, in the near future, we are going to explain the whole story. But for now, I'm resigning so that my private business should not derail the government from doing the job that it was elected to do, which is to improve the people of Zambia. So it's very unfortunate that my brother, Shua, can say that. And I was even surprised by the statement that came in from the Citizen First Party President, Honorable Harry Kalawa, who's the former Foreign Affairs Minister, who equally resigned by saying that President Hakainde Hichilema is a weak leader for accepting the resignation of Honorable Kakuo. In fact, he should thank President Hichilema for accepting, so that if there's any wrong that Honorable Kakuo has done, the investigative wings can freely investigate those issues.
Gregory Mofu is a leading member of the governing United Party for National Development, or UPND. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Uganda, Joel Senyonyi, the spokesperson for the National Unity Platform, or NUP, is now the leader of the opposition in parliament. He replaces Mathias Mpuuga, who has been the head of the opposition in the legislature for more than 2 years. Announcing the change, Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobby Wine, named Mpuuga as a commissioner in parliament. He rejected criticisms that the change in leadership in parliament is a demotion for Mpuuga. For more on his new position and his new plans for the opposition in the Ugandan parliament, I read Joel Senyonyi.
You know, my approach to positions really has always been service, regardless of the hierarchy and that kind of thing. You know, it's good to have the mentality of service. What I set out to do is, as prescribed in our laws provide that the cardinal role of the leader of the opposition is to keep the government in check. That means to hold the government accountable every step of the way. How is taxpayer money being utilized? And deliver services. Is there value for money? That's the task that I have together with my colleagues to, you know, pursue that and be sure, is there value for money? And these people accounting for the money. Uganda is an extremely corrupt country, sadly. We are a poor country, but even the little resources that are available, many times they are stolen. So our duty is to put the government on the spot to ensure there is service delivery, to expose the rot, the corruption there is, with the hope that action gets to be taken, all right? But also, we keep the government in check, not just regarding the resource envelope, but issues like human rights.
Talking about human rights concerns, officials of the government have often said that the NUP usually encourages their supporters to break the law willfully and then turn around and blame the police for enforcing the law. And two, the NUP encourages its supporters not to cooperate with the police when they are investigating issues that the NUP or opposition bring up. How are you going to tackle this in Parliament?
We have never advocated for the breaking of the law. Our leader, Bobi Wine, has said severally, we are non-violent, and there's always called upon our supporters to be non-violent and to be peaceful in our quest for change. Anyone who acts to the contrary is not one of us. Number two, for all of us that have been arrested before, myself have been arrested several times, you know, and charged and so on, none of us has ever been convicted of any offense. That's why they normally trump up charges. They come up with ridiculous things. In Arua, when they arrested Bobi Wine, they planted guns in his hotel room until eventually they realized this can't work. So the whole thing fell apart and so on. So none of us has been convicted of any offense. Our clarion call has been, if you assume that somebody has committed an offense, produce them in a court of law. But what do? They kidnap people, they disappear them, and for years, these people are missing. How do you say I'm violent or I'm breaking the law, yet you've not produced me in a court of law?
The local media is reporting that you said you don't need to have a personal relationship with the Speaker of Parliament. Now, some argue that your personal relationship with him is just a camaraderie. You work together, so there has to be a cordial relationship between the two. This, they said, speaks volumes of the confrontational nature that you plan to take as leader of the opposition in Parliament. Your response to that?
I've said it severally, and I will repeat it. I don't need to be friends with the Speaker. We are both leaders occupying different offices. We both have work cut out for us, okay? And incidentally, our work is intertwined because she's the Speaker of Parliament, I'm the leader of the opposition in Parliament, and so we've got to work together in many ways, all right? She does not have to be my friend. I don't have to be a friend. What's important is that we respect one another. That's the most important thing. We've got to respect each other, respect her as my Speaker. She respects me as a leader in that house, okay? Respects my views even when we disagree. Because yes, we shall have many opportunities to disagree. But let there be respect as opposed to, you know, either trying to stifle me or that kind of thing. That's the most important thing.
The criticism of the opposition is that everything the government does is negative and you criticize, and that you don't offer any tangible, concrete solutions to better the lives of Ugandans, and that only criticizing for criticizing's sake is the reason why they keep on voting for the National Resistance Movement or the NRM in Parliament. How do you respond to that?
First of all, when they say they keep voting for them, we all saw how the election happened, the rigging, the brutality, and so on. On another day, we can talk about the election and how it happened, all right? But two, it's not true that we don't offer alternatives. In that Parliament where I sit, I've been a committee chairperson and a member of Parliament. You know, we always have an alternative budget. For each ministerial policy statement, we offer an alternative. And we say, this is what we think ought to be done. When it's the budget process like is happening right now, we say, look, you guys want to inject more money in things that don't add value. And we put our money where our mouth is. Can we invest more in healthcare? Can we invest more in education? That way you're securing the future. In many respects, focus on the ordinary person.
Joel Senyonyi is the new leader of the opposition in Parliament. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In Senegal, a former prime minister, Mimi Touré, is seeking to become the first female president of the West African country. This after filling out nomination papers at the Constitutional Council to contest before the deadline. She is among 80 candidates who have so far filed their nomination documents. Prospective voters who choose a new president in the coming February 25th elections. It comes as President Macky Sall says he will not seek a third term in office. Touré, a lawyer and anti-corruption campaigner who is a former justice minister, is expressing confidence in winning the presidential contest. This, despite skeptics who say that the country does not appear to be ready for a female president. For more about her chances in becoming the first female president of Senegal in the coming general election, I reached Mimi Touré.
So we expect a very open election. I do believe that we do have very good chance to elect the first female president. And I think that will be a very great opportunity for Senegal. I do believe that women have specific leadership style. We are more inclined to consensus, to social policies, and to sharing, and to end violence in of any sort. So we are very confident that this candidacy is going to move forward and that we will win.
What makes you uniquely qualified that you think the people of Senegal or Senegalese will repose confidence in you to make you the first female president?
I'm the more qualified of all candidates, politically and technically. None of them had the record I have. You have 7 prime ministers, okay, I'm one of them. But none of them was before Minister of Justice. I ran very high-profile criminal cases and had positive results. I'm a corruption fighter. I led a national institution. None of them did, which is the Economic and Social Council. I led the legislative election for the presidential party. So I think I'm the best qualified candidate, actually.
But do you think Senegalese are ready to have a female president at this moment?
I definitely believe so. If Liberia did that, I don't see why Senegalese people won't. We are not less sophisticated, although people would say, well, it's a Muslim country. Let me tell you that in very remote areas, some women won over men. And became mayor of the small town in very conservative settings. I think Senegalese reached the point where it doesn't matter whether you're a woman or a man. What they're looking forward is a qualified president, is a non-corrupt president. And I think I have displayed evidence that I am. So I don't think it is going. Actually, as a matter of fact, it could be an advantage because female now are very mobilized and they are making good progress. The best student at primary school is a female. High school is a female. There is a big number of female in medical school to become medical doctors, not only nurses. The best one are female. A female even won the Quranic recital contest. So it's about time that we level our game higher, and Senegal, I think, would welcome a female president. I don't have doubt about it.
What do you say to political analysts who are saying, in order for you to really win the presidency, you need to convince your other contestants who are in the opposition to rally behind you, which will give you a better chance of winning the presidency?
But nobody is going to run to win from the first round. Let's remember what occurred in 2012. The opposition had 12 candidates, yet President Abdoulaye Wade lost. Because in any case, people will rally, during the second round. And most of the time, or always, the president's candidate, which is the case this time, lose systematically in the second round. So it's okay that we go disorderly in the first round, but for sure we will all rally around the opposition candidate in the second round. That's what I believe. Let me also tell you that the candidate coming from the presidential camp is not the only one in that camp. The APR and Benobo Kayaka, that's the name of the president, Macky Sall coalition, they are split into many candidates too. So they're facing the same issue as the opposition. But everything will be sought out in the second round, and that's going to be one unique candidate of the opposition anyway.
Mimi Touré is a former Senegalese prime minister. She spoke with me from the capital, Dakar. In Sierra Leone, a leading member of the main opposition All People's Congress, or APC, is calling for unity across the country as well as among the rank and file of his group. Ibrahim Kemu Sisi, a former minister for transportation, is also calling for cool heads and patience. This, as it announced in a Christmas message that the party is joining a committee to investigate the outcome of the recent elections. The announcement comes after a section of the party is demanding the resignation or removal of Samora Kamara as the group's presidential candidate over charges of corruption. Kamara denies the allegations. For more about his call, I reach Ibrahim Kemo Sisi.
In the first place, I called on, first of all, fellow Sierra Leoneans in general for unity. Then I called on APCans in particular for unity, consistent with our emblem, our logo, our motto as a country, unity, freedom and justice. That's what I spoke to.
A faction of the party is calling for the removal of its presidential candidate, Dr. Samora Kamara, to invoke Article 47A, subsection 4 of the APC 2022 Constitution. What is your reaction to this?
My position is very clear. I said to them, now, if you don't remove Samora Kamara, what's the consequence? What's going to happen with the party? But then, if you remove him, Samora Kamara now, what happens to the party? Intra-party problems will arise. No matter what you think, say, or do, if Samora does not go to court, if you remove him for interpretation, somebody favoring Samora will go to court. Do we still want to go to court? No, I don't think so. Additionally, the program I'm advocating for is for the tripartite investigation of the 24th June 2023, which is only for 6 months. It's not even 6 months again. From now, it's not over 6 months again. After 6 months, what will have broken? Nothing. Whether he wins or does not win, we can still apply the court. It's not late to apply it. So therefore, why are we in a hurry to remove Dr. Samora Martin Kamara from being a leader? What's the benefit? That's my position. That's why I advise them. Leave that alone. If it's of no consequence, let us wait until after the investigation. Then we'll have informed decisions to take. Then I will know, okay, this is what has happened. But fair enough, this man did not lose the elections, according to him and according to my understanding, too.
What do you say to those who want him gone or replaced, who are of the view that he has too many allegations of corruption against him, so he should first go clear his name and then come back to vie for the position of the party or to represent the party in the future? Your thoughts?
Yes. Before he was elected, flagged by the new, the cases were in court. Do you know that? Why didn't they remove him in the first place before he went to the contest with us? They waited until after he's won elections, wherever we. Now that he's contesting election, he's removing because of criminal cases. I disagree with them. It is rather too late for them to think about that, to say, because he has cases in court, they must remove him. Those cases, first of all, have no consequence as far as I'm concerned. But the very authorities allowed him to contest without convicting him. Why now? After, if you think that he has lost election, allow the process to go through. If you don't want him, allow the process to go through, and then you can take a position.
What do you say to the other section of the party who are of the opinion that the recent agreement they signed with the government or the ruling SLPP that allowed members of parliament to return to take their positions in parliament from the opposition undermines the party in its entirety and that the leadership appears to have sold out?
Well, I do not know about selling out. I will not speak to that. What I speak to is that for them to have allowed MPs to go to parliament is in goodwill. It's a goodwill, in good faith, that they are planning to go into this dialogue with good faith, in good faith. So I subscribe to that myself in the meeting that they should go to parliament. Why? Because if you want to negotiate, it means there is something wrong. If you want to be honest with yourself, there must be a give and take for us to pursue the sincere, objective, and democratic solution out of this thing. If we forestall parliament from working because we want to get correct results, then it means you are forestalling democracy. Therefore, the party said, okay, you know what? Whilst we continue with our investigations, you go to parliament and do your job. At the end of the day, for me, I think we even get more members of parliament than what we have now after the investigation. It is genuine.
Ibrahim Kemosis is a former minister for transportation. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. In the Gambia, a group representing lawyers in the West African country has elected Nene Cham as its president. A prominent private legal practitioner, Cham will lead the Gambia Bar Association for 2 years. She's a human rights defender, an international, regional and national legal expert on women's and children's rights, as well as the author of FLAG publications. Local media say her election marks a significant chapter in the annals of the law organization. It also hails her leadership qualities, which legal experts say contributed to her election. For more reaction, what she plans to do as the new president of the Gambia Bar Association, I reached Nene Cham.
We have our goals and objectives, mainly upholding the rule of law, you know, protecting human rights and justice. Also looking out for the welfare of our members. That's very important to us in terms of their, you know, continuing professional development, you know, etc. So There's a whole lot of, we're like a watchdog.
What made your fellow colleagues, members of the Bar Association, to repose confidence in your leadership and decided that, well, Madam Cham is the best person to lead us as president now?
Wow, you're asking me a question that you actually said is meant for the members. I don't know. I do have some experience in leadership, in that I was president of the Female Lawyers Association Gambia, FLAG, for 2 terms. That was between 2011 and 2016. And we did manage to fly the flag high, defending Gambian women and children who can't afford services of a lawyer, and basically promoting women's rights, etc. So, you know, they're aware of my perhaps ability to lead qualities, leadership qualities. And also, I'm 23 years at the bar, and I've always been active private legal practitioner, active in the Bar Association, in the Gambia Bar Association as well, having served in other executive positions before. So I don't know, you could ask them, but my guess is that is why they elected me, and I'm grateful for the confidence. It means a lot to me coming from my colleagues.
In the next few months, what should members of the Bar Association and the entire population expect from your leadership?
Well, we will continue to, as I say, the, you know, the values that we aspire to that we have, you know, keeping an eye on the legal profession and trying to ensure independence of the judiciary, independence of the profession as a whole, you know, upholding standards, integrity and all of that, as well as unity as well. We need to, you know, kind of unify members. It's not a big fact. It's not a factor really, but bring members together, get them more interested in what the association is all about, get them involved, get their views in the priority areas that they would want this executive to focus on. So not too much, but we also have, you know, projects to implement. We've forged partnerships with other donor partners and other organizations, you know, and so we will be implementing some of those rule of law projects, etc. And we also have a project to build our headquarters. That's top priority. So there's a lot to expect, but, you know, slowly.
Ms. Cham, when I told people I was going to talk to you, one of the questions they kept asking is if the organization under your leadership would hold the government feet to the fire when it comes to human rights concerns.
No, why not? We've always done that. The bar has always done that, particularly even when we was very, very tough under the former regime. The bar would speak out. As I said, we will act as a watchdog. I mean, government is our partner, number one partner there, I say, and because they are charged with, the government is charged with the duties and responsibility, number one, the primary duty bearer for respecting human rights and really taking care of its own people. So we're just, you know, we will continue to work with them, including the Attorney General's Office and Minister Ministry of Justice, as well as the judiciary, and ensuring that we have a common goal, ensuring that we uphold standards and defend, we keep track of what's happening, you know, keep them in check, so to speak. And I'm sure they will welcome it. I have a cordial relationship with almost everybody, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Nene Cham is the new president of the Gambia Bar Association. She spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. In Cameroon, the main opposition Social Democratic Front, or SDF, has signed an agreement with the Federation of Trade Unions in the capital, Yaoundé. The move, representatives of both groups say, will help empower and advocate for the rights of all workers. They also say the agreement called Kalamau, which stands for Cameroonian Labour Movement, presents a united platform to amplify the concerns and aspirations of the working class. For more about the agreement and its political prospects, I reach Yvonne B. Muma. She is a leading member of the SDF, who is the National Secretary for Political Education and Training.
This is an innovation in Cameroon. You know, we have workers, trade union, and syndicates. Syndicates come together and constitute themselves into confederations that represents the underprivileged in Cameroon, that represents the concerns of all workers in Cameroon. So, like a socialist party, we decided to go towards them, and there are 11 syndicate confederations. We signed an agreement with six of them, which now means that we are going to socially democratize politics in Cameroon. You don't need to belong to any other political party, but like a syndicate leader, if you are popular, you know you have the electorate, we are ready, like a party, a socialist party, to fill your candidacy. That's the most important. It was a huge event, but knowing the country in which we were, we didn't make so much noise about it before. We've signed agreements already. We've already set down the working rules, which for once, popular representatives of syndicates can be candidates in elections without obligatorily being militants of a political party.
What is the significance of this, and what impact do you think this will have on an ordinary Cameroonian worker?
Yes, an ordinary Cameroonian worker who is member of a syndicate will want to know what the SDF is proposing to workers. We are proposing a progressive minimum package like salary, because in Cameroon, I think we have the lowest minimum payment package in the whole of the world, talk less of Africa. So we are thinking of a progressive improvement of the workers' conditions, and they know, like socialists, we are on their side. So for the syndicates to lead us off, to have embraced this, they had to consult with members of their syndicates who've never had an opportunity to actively participate in politics. You know, in Cameroon, once you're a civil servant or anything and you're appointed into government, they think that automatically you are part of the ruling party, which is the CPDM, which is very wrong. Workers in Cameroon, every citizen in Cameroon should have a free right. There's freedom of association following the 1990 laws. Why should workers be obliged to only be part of the ruling party? So that is a bold and huge step ahead.
You talked about the ruling party, the CPDM. What do you think this alliance could do? Because the CPDM has dominated Cameroon politics since Paul Biya came to power in 1982.
Peter, we are talking about the underprivileged. We are talking about the voice, about those who are almost voiceless. But we know when it comes to workers' syndicates, once they threaten a strike, the government stands on its heels. So we think that it's a huge achievement. It's a huge cash in the political domain in Cameroon. We are talking about a concession where once the workers have their issues, Even if we have one MP, that MP should be able to carry that to Parliament and make noise around their issues.
Are you saying to Cameroonian workers that the agreement is politically motivated to achieve the objective of the SDF, for which reason without the alliance has not made any significant gains? Is this the mood?
No, it's a win-win situation. You have a lot of candidates in Cameroon who would love to present themselves in elections, but they didn't have a rostrum. The SDF is offering them that rostrum. The SDF is offering them that space where they can come and present themselves like candidates without preconditions. It's a win-win situation, Peter. It's not exploitative, but we're finally giving a voice to the voiceless.
Yvonne Bimouma is SDF's National Secretary for Political Education and Training. She spoke with me from the Cameroonian commercial capital, Douala. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, this Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to
right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Family, my friends, Plateau State, Nigeria, and the entire world, a prosperous new year 2024. And to you, VOA, for the good work you have been doing. Pray that God will give you the strength to do more in 2024. Thank you very much.
Thought I'd ask you just the same. what are you doing, New Year?
I'm Andrew Fefegula from Sierra Leone. I love to listen to VOA, Voice of America. Greetings to everyone, compliment of the season, and I wish everyone a prosperous New Year in advance. Wishing you all long life and prosperity. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Happy New Year to you.
To suppose I'd ever be the one you chose out of the thousand invitations you
tell you all, babe, by the way I see you staring across the room, babe. No shame on the game, just don't push you beyond this. Yeah, you know what you gotta do tonight, do tonight. Just want you to make me move like it ain't a choice for you, like you got a job to do. Just want you to raise my roof, something sensational.
National Junior from Morocco, Liberia. I would like to extend this season greetings to my family in and out of Liberia. I thank you all. May the God Almighty bless us all.
Happy New Year to you. My bottle of color, take it back to my room. Ignite in the heat of the moment, let those sparks use. Blow it up to the ceiling, we're burning bright.
And that was music from our collection, and we hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, easy. I don't care if it's a random person or the biggest star. Out in Vegas or a little bar, it's really not a difference. If
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Al Santos, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, abundance will make cotton pool a stone. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Happy New Year, Africa.
But I need you and I can take you all the
Happy
way.
Happy New Year!
Man, you know I'm in a situation. Why you don't do this? Why are you tripping like that?
I understand that, but your whole vibe is, you know, I can see myself being with you forever.
That's really beautiful. I kind of dig you, too. You know that. We're friends, and I'm in a situation. I'm in a relationship, and you know what that means.
What whatever I gotta do, I'll do it for you.